listening to This Week in Mormons for the week of April 20s, 2012. Thank you for tuning in.
This week.
So, here we are.
I have a personal goal to not eat any Starburst while I'm trying to talk during this episode.
All right. I think that's a worthy personal goal.
That's a companionship goal that Jeff set for me.
Yes.
And we do very well with those.
Yes, that is exactly what it was. I said, you, sir. No, of our production woes.
You, sir.
Of the things that afflict us when we make the shows, I believe you eating is actually lower on the list compared to the irony that you have computer problems.
Yeah,
with great regularity. But
you know how it goes.
But I don't know. You're a professional.
I do, but I use, like, I have big things running in the background. My background services are intense.
Well, we've talked about this, why you can't have the big things running in the background when you record.
Jeff, I think I kill them all, but sometimes I don't.
Audio, that's what you got to remember. Audio recording is a memory hog. It really takes resources.
Which it shouldn't be. I look at audio recording as though it were instant messaging.
If only
AOL
it were.
AOL Messenger.
If only that were the case.
And that's why I always fail with the audio recording.
We have learned so much over the past 2+ years that we've been doing this show.
Wow, we have been doing it for 2+ years.
We've been doing
this
since the end of January of 2010, my friend.
That fateful day when we awkwardly mused over... No, we had like an ambitious agenda. We had all the news knocked out in 30 minutes. We were done.
Yeah, we didn't need to be friendly. We didn't waste time like this. We did this quick little thing...
And we didn't talk to each other. There was no Zarahemla Times back then.
Yeah, but there's not any anymore either.
There was no Beckstrom.
I do miss Beckstrom. I feel like our world back then 2 years ago was a little, I don't know, was it brighter? Was it more carefree for the podcast back then? Back then we had Beckstrom. We had Glenn Beck gave us plenty of stuff to make fun of.
Yeah, we had, it was more of a comedic commentary. Now we have like legitimate news things.
That was back when McKay worked for the Mormon Times. I mean, we had...
Oh, how we mocked him.
Folks, and now all we have is like Peggy Fletcher Stack and really very little else, which is sad for me. I feel like we need to find the ridiculous stuff sometimes. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know who I am anymore. Anyways, so it's Tuesday. How's your weekend? How are you? What's with
rocking
life?
And rolling? I did a an uncle's road trip where me and my brothers got my nephew.
Yeah, you were in Boulder, right?
We hit Boulder, which was great. Got to go see all the old friends there, and then we went out to Breckenridge and snowboarded Breck, as they say in the biz. and that was actually a lot of fun. It was my nephew's first time snowboarding. He's 14, and so we got him up there, and he. He was so creaky and achy the next day, but he's like, that was the coolest thing I've ever done.
Dude, and
I count it as a success.
I've never snowboarded.
Then we came to Provo/Salt Lake, and we did all the things I could think to do, because winter's ended and it's not quite summer yet.
Uh-huh.
So we did things like hike the Y and watch movies.
Did you watch Hitch?
There's not a whole lot to do here if you just like roll into town.
So are you back in Utah now?
I am. I'm sitting in Salt Lake City.
I didn't even know that. But you drove?
In my apartment here.
I'm very confused. You've been flying back and forth for things.
Yeah, I've been flying, and then the driving is what threw you off. Normally, you're up to date with my Foursquare check-ins at airports.
I usually am, but I guess you drove somebody else's car then, I assume.
No, I drove my car.
Has your car just been in Kansas City this whole time?
It has.
This is so weird for me. I
was going to leave my car out in Salt Lake, but then I canceled my plane ticket. I think I'm going to drive it back out.
All right.
I'm feeling adventurous, Jeff.
Hey, I get that way too, man. Sometimes I feel like I was actually toying the other week with possibly driving all the way to Glacier National Park and doing this grand Great Plains tour.
Yeah, I want to go to Yellowstone on my way home. Yellowstone or the Grand Canyon. I mean, they're going north or south.
Yeah, I don't know which one's... Well, I guess I don't know which one's the least out of the way for those, but... all right.
Well, definitely Yellowstone is less of a drive than the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, it's a bit of a haul to get down there.
But, you know...
Especially if you got to go to the
weekend.
South Rim.
My face and lips are sunburned and peeling.
Well, okay.
I feel like a leper. And I'm going to use this in a talk someday, and I'll say, I turned back and thanked him. As though I were a leper.
Okay, just keep talking there, buddy. Keep talking.
Sorry.
Just keep it going. My weekend was very simple. I had delicious waffles, which might have been the highlight for me.
From the Waffle House?
No, if only. Or the Waffle House. There's one by my house, which is not part of the, you know, the Waffle House chain. And everyone thinks it's just a typo on a Waffle House. It's the Waffle House. It has one F.
How?
And it just sits right there, and everybody knows the Waffle House.
How did they get away with that?
Because it's the Waffle House, not a Waffle House. It's Waffle.
Or what are waffles?
Just waffles with one F.
Well, shouldn't Waffle House have some kind of ownership over that?
I don't know. I mean, this begs the question. What if a company called McDonald's showed up? Not
yeah,
Mick.
They would get sued. You're not allowed to do
not
that.
Not the Irish way, but McDonald's, the Scottish way. What do you say?
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
Or Burger Queen.
Those exist.
Or
Burger Kung probably wouldn't be able to fly, though.
Or Wendy's is now bigger than Burger King. So instead of calling it Wendy's, we would call it typical stereotypical name used for large girls in 80s television shows.
Wendy wasn't fat.
I think Wendy's been used as a fat name for a long time.
Wait, are you thinking of Punky Brewster?
No, okay. Wendy herself, the mascot of Wendy's, is not fat. But in general, I think the name Wendy has been thrown around for the past 20 years.
Boo, Jeff.
Routinely associated with larger girls. You think I'm lying, but go ahead and go back to your Charles in Charge era, America, and see what you find. I think you'll be surprised.
Boo, Jeff.
I'm not saying I approve or condone this of these silly things.
Boo.
And now you are a goat.
No, I'm booing you.
You shouldn't do that. So, by the way, speaking of our good friend McKay, who we mentioned before, McKay has really gone mainstream, enough so that Jennifer Rubin, we won't talk about Jennifer Rubin, but she wrote an opinion piece in the Washington Post and really just laid into McKay Coppins as if he is like a bad Mormon.
Well, he is.
The mainstream media has come after McKay for being a bad Mormon.
Jeff, McKay has gotten so flippant in his views, in his witticisms.
And it's basically they come after him. I mean, you know the whole Ann Romney thing that's been going on for the past few weeks, the whole stay-at-home mom deal and all that stuff. McKay wrote a piece about that. This is about a week ago almost now.
What did he say?
Much of the same that it was called Why Ann Stayed Home, some quotes. But he did say some things like, where'd it go? I lost my quote. But, it almost made it seem like he didn't portray, and I'll agree with her actually, that he didn't portray Ann Romney in exactly the right way, staying home for the correct reasons, more as if it was a requirement or she was put up to it or she was this and that. McKay's not having a good time. He also had some bad quotes about African-American history within the church when he was on MSNBC a few weeks ago. McKay is having a rough go.
I actually think McKay has fallen into, you know, one of those silos that you and I, Jeff, have been guilty of from time to time of trying to give the other side almost too much credit, right? Where you bring their argument in and almost put it up on a pedestal because it's different from our own. You want to show how free thinking you are, and so you give this other argument a ton of credit and your own less, which. Like that's what it appears to me that he's trying too hard.
Perhaps I think it's difficult. If you're a mainstream journalist and you are LDS and you're a go-to person for such things, and as far as I know, I don't know McKay Coppins, but he seems to defend himself and make the point that he is, you know, like active in the church and stuff like that. You know, the work is work. Journalism is one thing, but he is an active member. But of course, how do you? I don't think it's an easy place to be in. When you want to try to weigh both sides and show objectivity, when you still, of course, have your own personal beliefs and convictions, it's hard. And like I think, like you just said, you and I have come under fire for the same stuff before, trying to just explain things in perhaps a more objective point of view, even if it's not necessarily what we believe. But
when there, so the what was her name, Jennifer something,
Jennifer Rubin.
Jennifer Rubin, she says, no one should conclude that because the author of a piece shares the religious affiliation of the group with whom he's critiquing, he has free rein to impugn and smear, which is true, right? I think that maybe he takes some liberties that maybe he shouldn't. And you and I mean, we'll poke a little fun at ourselves being Mormons from time to time. Just because we are Mormon, we feel like we have that right, right? Which maybe, I don't know, maybe sometimes we're prone to go a little too far, which I think McKay has definitely been guilty of doing this a couple of times, and I don't know if he feels that way. He hasn't responded to this piece at all, but yeah, McKay, just because you're Mormon doesn't mean you got to be a jerk to Mormons.
Yeah. Yeah, you punk. But that's all. But our heart goes out to you, McKay.
Did the Ann Romney stuff, is that all settled down now?
I think it's pretty settled down. I know Ann Romney spoke at some conference yesterday, and it's been good in terms of selling tickets for fundraising and stuff like that within the Republican area for Ann Romney appearances. She gave some whole thing, told her whole story about being a mom and this and that. Ann Romney's very popular. She's a wonderful surrogate for Mitt. So,
well, I mean, it's an interesting to watch all this. Mitt Romney responded to Governor Brian Schweitzer's.
Is that the Montana guy?
They call it
Wyoming?
The Mormon Slam.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Where he said that Mitt Romney would have a hard time narrowing the gender gap with Barack Obama because his family came from a polygamy commune in Mexico, and because women are not great fans of polygamy. And then,
really? Because they seem to have no problem being a part of it. No, too soon. No.
And then Schweitzer's advisor Eric Stern responds to the criticism and says the governor meant what he said precisely. It has nothing to do with Mr. Romney's faith or the Mormon Church, both of which the governor knows reject polygamy.
Yeah,
rather,
right.
Mr. Schweitzer was describing a strategic problem Romney faces. So, yeah, kind of a
schmuck.
But
that's the classic case when someone, if you oppose somebody, you say, you know what could be a problem for this person is blank, 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 and blank. I'm not saying that that's what I believe or that's the issue thus far, but that could become an issue. But then you just made it an issue by doing that. It's totally intentional. I mean, come on.
So Romney's response was, I don't know that I have any particular reaction. My dad was not a polygamist. My dad grew up with a family with a mom and a dad and a few brothers and one sister. They lived in Mexico and lived a very nice life there from what I understood. And then when he was, I think, 5 or 6 years old, there was a revolution in Mexico. They escaped. I believe they went to El Paso first, where they were helped by the government to get on their feet. And then his dad went around the country, L.A., I think Idaho, Utah, and then went broke more than once. My dad had a very tough upbringing. It's just a cheap pot shot. It's the same as that other guy, whoever we were talking about last week, that you know, he made the comment of, oh, the Mormon religion was started by some guy who shacked up with a maid and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just, cheap.
Yeah.
It's cheap. Slanderous.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Anyway.
It is. Well, the good. You know, we might as well just keep on the Mitt Romney stuff. There's a lot going on in this world. So this good guy, I actually like this good old Bob Lunsberry.
Did you ever read him before, or is this a...
No, do you know Bob Lunsberry?
No, I'm not an 1180 listener, but I like him.
Are you just saying it's because...
I like him from this piece. He seems reasonable.
He does, and I believe his show airs on... He's based out of Rochester, New York.
Rochester.
Yeah, Rochester. So the guy might know a thing or two about Mormons. I mean, Palmyra's close by. I don't know. But a little op-ed he wrote here called Mitt Romney's Underwear. Now, when I see this typically, I think, oh boy, here we go again. More magic underwear stuff. But it's actually a reasonably measured piece defending the whole notion of symbolic clothing because of religion, whether it's, you know, whether it's inner clothing or outer clothing, whatever it might be. He goes to the into the background of religious garments, of course, mentioning, you know, yarmulkes and what Sikhs wear and what Muslims wear and this and that. And that the Mormon garment is no different. It's not some weird thing. And especially when you think about this in the sense of, like, Roman Catholics. They have worn sacred garments for a very long time. We just don't think of them the same way because it's a little more enmeshed in our culture. Simple things like the habit that a nun wears is considered sacred, holy wear. So it's just because it's just different for everybody. And I think it's actually a pretty good piece that he writes defending it, basically saying that people who rip on Mitt Romney's underwear are idiots and bigots.
Well,
and decent people would not make this an issue or make fun of it. So appreciate that.
Yeah, I thought it was a phenomenal piece. And one that was really nice to, you know, it was good to hit like on that, share that out, because it's, as you read through that, you kind of, it forces you to take a step back and be like, oh yeah, no, that really is fairly mainstream. I mean, is parallel with like Judaism and you know, the yarmulke that's worn, and then the apron, and you know, like there's all kinds of paraphernalia that goes in with that, and nobody, I mean, it's because it's visible and people see it, they're very accepting of it. I think the reason why we get some of our feedback that we get on our garment is because it's worn under the clothes, and we, you know, we don't make it a point to show it to people.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, that adds to the air of mystery about it.
Yeah, but
or whatever,
like, but you take a step back and you're like, this is part of religion. I mean, this has been going on since the beginning of religion. You've had things that you were supposed to wear, so
yeah, nothing new here. And
nice,
if anything,
to get a reasonable article come through.
Yeah, Bob Lunsbury, we salute you, sir.
Bob is a friend of the show now.
Bob is a friend of the show. We should have him on. By the way, speaking of having people on, I guess I can't name names, but I met a new contact last week.
Obama.
No, but someone who is very well affiliated with many LDS people that work on the Hill. And this individual was very open when learning about our podcast and wanting to see if we would ever want to have any of them on the show. So, folks, I'm not promising anything.
Jesus?
But for all we know, we might have Orrin Hatch on this show at some point. Who knows? Who knows?
Or Maury Povich.
I might actually prefer Maury Povich.
So
he can tell me that I am not the father.
That would be a great TWIM episode, I guarantee it.
Maury Povich.
We should do one in Springer style, just for kicks.
Okay.
Pretty cool article called "A Female Episcopal Priest Visits a Mormon Temple."
Oh, this thing's gone viral all over the Mormon.
It's been really cool
the past couple of days. Yeah.
I mean, this is another one of those that is an easy share to your social media because it's. I like things that I can share that people that read it wouldn't be confused if they weren't Mormon, right? And this starts at the kind of very base level, and you just walk through this lady's experience of going to visit the Mormon temple in Kansas City and, you know, kind of what she got out of it and what she was expecting. One of the things that she mentioned, which I thought was really, I don't know, kind of a mature point of view to take, is she was, you know, she was curious if she was going to have, as she calls it, a God experience.
Right.
Right? Where, actually, I'm not sure that is exactly what she called it. I'm not.
Yeah, no, that's basically what she called it. Yeah,
a God moment type thing where she would, you know, where she would feel close to God. And she went in looking for that, seeing if that was something that was going to happen, as well as she had a couple of questions prepared that she wanted answers to, and went through the tour, which I've been through a couple of times.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you've been through already.
Yeah, they do a really good job with it. It's pretty basic. I remember when I went through an open house down in St. Louis, like there were a couple of things that they mentioned, you know, like people asked about the altar on every tour I went through on that one. And there, you know, I guess somebody had written some article somewhere that talked about the altars in the temple. Okay. And they just said, no, you know, it's a focal point of the room, blah, blah, blah. But the Kansas City open house, they take you through like the men's changing room.
Right.
They take you through the, you know, the like the creation room.
Yeah, they take you through the various
the middle room, and then the celestial room, and then you get to see a ceiling room, and that's about it. They walk you through kind of all the other sides of it. But I mean, so far as rooms go, that's about it. And the celestial room, which I think is smart of them, they say, all right, we're going to go into the celestial room. I'd like you to, you know, we're not going to say anything in there. We're just going to spend about a minute and a half, and you're going to, you know, like just save your questions till after. And then as we exit, you're welcome to ask anything you'd like. And it's actually a pretty cool experience to go through that and to have that just kind of sitting there in the celestial room. You get this great little quiet, peaceful moment. And so that was... For her, she took note of that and mentioned that was where.
Yeah, here, let me, I'd be happy. I like the quote, actually. It's her penultimate paragraph. She said, quote, like Dante, who saw God face to face, but had no words to describe the encounter, I have few words to describe what I felt in that moment. But But I can say this, while it did not convert me, nor did it make me want to be a Mormon, the silence and peace I felt reminded me of the many other times I felt close to God, whether in an Episcopal cathedral, in a clear, warm ocean, or in my ratty old car. And because of that, I came to understand why temples exist and why they are so important to Mormons across the world. And I like that little last bit right there. You know, understanding why it's important to us. And this has been gotten so much good play. I mean, the church's actual newsroom even linked to it, which is rare. They don't tend to jump on a lot of stuff from the Huffington Post or the like. But
yeah.
But you got an Episcopal priest openly saying, look, this didn't convert me, but I clearly felt the spirit there, and I understand more why this is important to you and why you keep it sacred the way you do.
Just a huge, huge win for the church. And that's one thing that I thought was interesting. They like the missionaries there even made the point. They said, if you'd like a Book of Mormon or something, you can come talk to us. We don't have any to give you here. That's not the reason that we're doing this. We're just helping you have a good experience going through the temple. We're not trying to push literature on you or anything like that. But if you're, if that's something you're interested in, you can come talk to us and we'll figure out a way to get you some. But they didn't have a stack of Book of Mormons.
Copies of the Book of Mormon. Yes.
Sitting there waiting to give out. That wasn't the intent at all, which I thought was really cool. Made it a lot less confrontational for people going through.
So, okay, I'm going to segue into a couple things. First of all, I just have a question for you, thinking about missionaries. Now, I don't think this was off, but I was at lunch yesterday, and in came two elders and two sisters. Is that kosher for just two elders and two sisters? It was preparation day. They were just like shopping, in Old Town. And they go to lunch. I mean, they're in public. I get it. I don't think
it's
huge.
No, that's a double date.
But I couldn't help but look at it when they're getting there. I'm like, this is so like hilariously double date-esque. And I mean, I talked to them a little bit because the two sisters are in my ward. But just hearing them talk about stuff, like it even sounded like classic first date questions. Well, I was studying blah, 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 and da-da-da before I came on my mission.
That's taboo.
Is that taboo? I mean, I can understand four elders and two sisters. Maybe, a whole district or something.
Yep.
But a two-on-two, is that naughty?
That's called a double date.
Okay. Listeners, I welcome all of your feedback on this. I have no control or input into the lives of the missionaries here in the Northern Virginia area, but...
You should slash their tires and say it was a message from the TWIM Army.
I mean, the fact that it did... the first thing that popped in my head, like, this is a funny little double date they're on. How adorable. Good for them. But also, temple news, just real quick, the dedication dates and the open house dates for the Brigham City Temple, the one that Al often forgets about when he always says that Kansas City will be the only temple dedicated in North America this year. The Brigham City Temple will be dedicated on the 23rd of September of this year, and the open house will be August 18th through the 15th of September. So that's
very cool.
Great news for Brigham City, especially because that whole neck of the woods... You just pretty much have Bountiful and Logan right now because Ogden's closed doing the whole Ogden facelift
thing. So hard.
Life is hard. If you live in Ogden, I mean, where do you go? You have to drive down to Bountiful? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
25 minutes? So big news for that, everyone. Congratulations, Brigham City. You are one of the last metropolitan-ish. Actually, it's technically a micropolitan area that it will have a temple. Good job, you guys. Winning.
Neat.
It is neat. I'm proud. Happy.
So the Mormon channel is getting all crazy on us.
Oh, please tell me.
The Mormon channel is that's also like where like the church's outlet for listening to Mormon radio, stuff like that.
Yeah,
they
for
also
the
have
most
a YouTube
part.
Channel, and they released a little ad spot on there.
Yeah, because they because there's a difference because YouTube is there's no Mormon channel, isn't it? Just the Mormon messages page on YouTube, which has all the like really uplifting, all those really
the
like nice
channel
videos.
Was called.
Anyways, but the point
Hold
is,
on,
it was
I'm
a
checking
it was
it. Oh, it is Mormon messages,
but on Mormon messages, it's a promo for the Mormon.
I misspoke,
channel,
Jeff.
No, you're fine. I just think it's funny. They're basically running promos. We're doing kind of intro,
so Mormon messages
promos.
Released a little video for an ad spot, which has me really confused as to the utility of it and the purpose of it. Apparently, there's, they follow the story of Barry, the Mac computer, who likes watching Mormon messages. Is that what you got out of it, Jeff? I mean...
Okay, let's walk people through the narrative here. It starts off showing a car pulling up to, like, Alta or something like that. And he's like, hey, I'm Barry. And you think Barry's like the guy getting out of the car. It's like, I like snowboarding. I like this and that. Then as time goes on, yes, you realize that Barry is a computer. Not just any computer, mind you. He's like a MacBook from like 2007. He's an old computer. And then it goes on about what he likes, and it's weird. I didn't... One of our listeners sent it to us on Twitter. That's how I first found it.
The church is clearly trying to like build in some viral things that people will share that they think are funny and stuff. But
I think this is a miss, though. In the
huge miss. I mean, Mormon messages. It's not like you're not. I mean, little witty computers named Barry. No one. I don't care to share that with anybody.
Yeah, it's just weird. I look
can
at this
tell you when these things are gonna flop.
And for how hip we have gotten as Mormons, at least how savvy we've become with viral stuff and social media, and this is the kind of thing I would not want anybody to see, because I think they would feel that Mormons are backwards, weird people with a very odd sense of humor or definition.
They'd be confused.
Of what is
funny. Why is this Mac computer watching videos of Jesus?
Yeah,
I don't get it.
I don't get Barry the Mac, but we will have this. I would
parallel this to Microsoft's attempt with Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah,
you remember that
bad
ad campaign they did?
Yeah, those were very random.
It was the same thing where you watched and you said, I'm confused. I'm not inspired to buy anything. I don't want to do anything now. I just want answers. Barry, we want answers.
Maybe they're hoping that people will want answers in the terms of having missionaries answer their questions.
Be like, well, we saw this really confusing commercial on your channel. Would you mind sending representatives?
Can you imagine how much fun it would be to be a missionary today and be able to sit around in a chat room and field questions from people? Oh, my gosh.
That would not be fun, man. I've sat in chat rooms before. That's
so
no
have
fun.
I. Man, come on. You go in there, you do the age, sex, location check, see who's hanging out.
ASL, what's
see,
up, everybody?
See what
everybody?
Questions they have
I'll
for
only,
you.
I'll only teach you if you can type 40 words a minute.
Exactly. So speaking of other church promotional things, we've got another quote-unquote infographic. I believe the term infographic is starting to become loosely applied to these.
I don't think it was explained correctly to the church's advertising department.
Anyways, this one is all about lay leadership. I think we need to make just a collage of the... What is the third or the fourth infographic we've seen in the past couple of months?
I don't know.
Anyway, this explains everything about lay leadership in the church, as you might imagine. So it has good information there. I can respect that. It still kind of confuses me about it. Explains what a stake is, similar to a Catholic diocese, what a high council is, what auxiliary presidencies are. Just a note for everybody, if you're trying to explain to your friends, church organization,
I
would avoid the word auxiliary anything. That's very jargon. I mean,
agreed.
But then, of course, the bishop brick, which I guess is okay to learn about. But I would have just stuck with bishop wards, the ward council. Really, does anyone need to know about ward council? Families and individuals, I feel like, is a positive thing. And then more ward auxiliaries. Sunday school presidency, without explaining what that is. Children's primary presidency. Young women, young men. I feel like it's a missed opportunity to explain, at least give more info on the young men's, young women's programs.
Yeah,
that's an important thing in the church. I think they should stress more about what we do with youth, but it's not there. I mean, there's only so much space, but still.
Nah.
I'm confused.
You know, infographics, whatever.
This one has a lot of words to be a graphic.
Yeah, that's cheating. You know.
They could have just done like a press release. I mean, they actually did. There's a whole release at the church's newsroom explaining all of this, but...
So we got to give a tip of the hat to old Kirby Hayborn.
Ah,
you know him from his appearances in Miller Lite commercials.
And and Sons of Provo, which I might have watched this weekend.
So wrong.
It is so wrong, but it's so awful. And you can't help but love it.
He's in the Three Stooges movie.
So Kirby has gone mainstream is what you're saying.
Was he a stooge? Was he?
No, I don't think his part was particularly... large, but this is a very good recovery after the Miller Lite stumble from 2006 or whenever that
the
was.
The famed Miller Lite stumble.
It's a little sad. I wish that would have happened when we were doing this show, because people were so upset about that. I mean, he was banned from playing BYU. He was going to do one of his little
Wait, I forget this shenanigan. What happened?
So what happened, it's pretty straightforward. Kirby Hayborn is an actor, and so he appeared in a Miller Lite commercial.
Yes.
Just as a guy, like, seeking beer. They never showed him, I don't think, physically drinking anything, but he was like a dude in search of whatever, refreshment or what have you. And so people were very up in arms about it because they feel like this raises the whole question again, you know, more famous Mormon people, what obligation do they have in a professional sense?
No, I do remember this.
So it was a big debacle. I kind of get it because if you're an actor, it's one thing just to be playing a part. But I feel like when you do commercials in one way or another, you're sort of endorsing products. I don't know, but at least it comes off.
He's just looking for a break. Man's trying to pay his bills.
Well, that's what
Miller Lite's the one calling.
Kirby was quoted as saying that the job was a blessing that allowed him to feed his wife and children. So, either way, whatever that is, Kirby, yes, is in the Three Stooges, which I know all of you have been seeing, just packing the theaters to see.
Yeah, I will. I'll pack that theater.
By the way, speaking of packing theaters, I went to the movies on Saturday, and the crowds for Think Like a Man just blew my mind. You probably didn't experience that in Utah because there are 4 black people in Utah, but out here, it was amazing.
Wait, before you go on, did you go to see Think Like a Man?
No, I went to see Titanic, but in 3D, it was amazing.
Okay, anyway.
The beauty of Titanic is I think it's a good movie. The last hour is lovely. I'm sitting there with my date who was just laughing through the entire film. Because there is some pretty bad dialogue. I mean, a woman's heart is an ocean of secrets. How can you not laugh at stuff like that?
Jeff, 10 years ago you wouldn't have laughed at that.
No, I did. When I saw Titanic, when it was in theaters before, I cheered when Leo died.
Boo, Jeff.
Cheers.
Boo. He was the street rat. The Aladdin of Titanic.
He really was. Anyway, the point is, that's a market that needs to get tapped into. We're talking like a Twilight premiere or like Hunger Games, just packing theaters all over the place.
Wow.
Huge. So good job, Steve Harvey, for your book adaptation.
Good job, Steve Harvey.
Good job, Kirby, for The Three Stooges. Very proud of you. Another thing to mention here, the Circling the Wagons conference. We've mentioned this before because I believe the last one happened maybe last fall in Utah, I think. But nearly 100 people attended a conference this past weekend out here in D.C. Actually, it was over in Vienna, Virginia, which is just a little bit outside of the Beltway. And Circling the Wagons, of course, is an LGBT conference. Our boy Mitch Main went to it, the famed Bishopric member in San Francisco. Woo. And other people. I really should have just gone. I mean, this is like 20-ish minutes from my house. I should have hung out, seen what was going on, you know?
I think you should have.
But I think these conferences are good, and I like it. I mean, we've had the It's Get Better thing. I'm very interested to see what might come up, because in a couple of weeks, Marlon K. Jensen is speaking for the CES Fireside, and he's become, you know, the church's sort of point man on handling a lot of our relationships with the gay and lesbian community. So a lot of stuff coming together this very right now. It's kind of interesting.
So there's one other one.
There's another one about gay stuff, if you want to.
No, I'm going the whiter the skin, the closer to God.
Oh, okay, go for it.
Tim Giago?
That sure. I'm just going to say yes.
The founder of the Native American Journalists Association. He writes an article in the Huffington Post around how in Mormondom, the whiter you are, the closer you are to God. The idea being that there's several quotes in our history and in the Book of Mormon that talk about the Lamanites being cursed with a dark skin.
That's always a fun one.
And that kind of thing. It confuses me a little bit that people pick this point to debate on, because I don't see there being any more, any more written in the Book of Mormon or in our teachings than in the Bible. And in large part, I feel that it's, you know, been to be understood that white is essentially referencing like the pureness. Yeah. That. I mean, there's comments that directly, you know, their skin, it's obviously talking about their skin. But like, I don't know. I don't see it as something that's God hates blacks or God hates, you know, Native Americans or anything like that. I don't read that out of it, which so obviously, you know, I'm a little bit confused at the that people pick that as a point to debate. But this guy definitely, there's some quotes by Brigham Young, Spencer W. Kimball, just talking about how the good ones were the one, like the white ones, and kind of weird. Just an odd article to toss out there right now. I don't know, yeah. Jeff.
No, I don't have a lot to add to it. I just I think it is an odd thing to toss out there. I think this just goes with what we've been talking about before. We're going to get stuff like this for no good reason, just because people like to have an excuse. Because for one thing, bashing Mormons sells. You know, it's good money, good publications or whatever. You get a lot of traffic that way. But this is just going to come around for a bit. Senseless stuff that has no bearing on what's actually going on. They just bring it up to bring it up.
Yep.
I don't know why. I love this. I love Mark Paredes, the guy who writes the Jews and Mormons blog. He writes some of the most thoughtful, interesting stuff, I think, that we really have out there. And he mentions that there's a new Jewish values survey that just came out. And if it is to be believed, it's interesting because Jews favor Mormons, prefer Mormons to the evangelical Christian right, or what have you. And I think this is cool, given everything that's happened in the past few months. You know, with baptisms for the dead and stuff like that.
We've got our Jewish brothers looking out for us.
We've had some fires. So according to the survey, when asked to rate the three religious groups on a scale of 1 to 100, Jews scored Mormons at 47, which still isn't like dreamy. But Muslims were at 41.4 and evangelicals were an embarrassing 20.9. So I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that even if we've had run-ins about temple stuff lately, those who can see the thought behind it aren't as offended, as long as they don't think we're forcibly making anybody do anything. And not to knock evangelicals, but you do compare this to what a lot of evangelical doctrine would say, and it would just simply say that people are going to hell straight up, you know, that there is no extra opportunity. And that's what they believe drives, you know, a good amount of this. Even though evangelicals tout their support of Israel and goodwill towards the Jews, I think, what can you do? I believe if there was another group that was telling me that my dead ancestors were straight up going to hell and didn't have a chance, I would not be a huge fan either.
It's actually interesting because I was just reading another article that talked about how Democrats have a bigger problem with electing a Mormon than the GOP does.
Really?
This coming from...
Do tell.
The Daily Beast, where they said that... So 22% of Democrats would not elect a Mormon president just on the base of him being Mormon.
Oh, that's nice.
Seems to be a lot of that.
There's plenty of anti-Mormon.
I know we talk a lot about Romney on here just because he is Mormon, but I would encourage everybody just compare the candidates based on what they stand for, not religion, not family upbringing or any of that.
Yeah, if you
try and figure out what they're going to do with this country in the next 4 years and vote that way.
And I should really apologize to our international listeners because there are many of them. Thank you, all of you. You know what? We're going to find next week for our Australian listeners. We're going to talk about Canberra and everything that's going on in Australian politics.
We're talking.
Just to balance it out, we're going to be like, "What's up, Master Planned Capital City? You guys have really got a lot of fun things happening there. I don't know what else to say about them."
Really good idea, Jeff.
Look, I just want everyone to feel represented. This is not a show about American politics. Just want everybody to feel the love. I could talk about all sorts of stuff. But there's a lot of Mitt Romney stuff. It's just kind of inevitable with the way things have gone. Another quick thing to add, and I think this is good because I think most Mormons would agree that this is stupid. This week, Mitt Romney added an openly gay man to his advisor panel for foreign policy. Big deal, right? I don't think this matters. And now a lot of people on the Christian right are calling out Romney, saying that he clearly doesn't support Christian values. How could he possibly employ a gay man? Okay, this has nothing to do with saying that he supports a man's right to get married or anything like that. Just that he gave a job to a gay person. Now, I think we need to check ourselves. If you take issue with a gay person being employed, I believe that qualifies as discrimination, people, under the same ways as it would be to not hire somebody because she is a woman or because he or she is a racial minority, all the same stuff. So
Boo.
I think most members of the church would also say boo to that. I think it's pretty ridiculous. I don't think many people would have an issue with hiring a gay person. Who cares, right? How does that matter? I don't think it does.
Huh.
But I love you. And also, another thing about the church and gay stuff. We're going out real quick. A nice little article on CNN's website about whether the church is, or actually the gay rights activists are now saying that they see the church sort of softening, or at least its members softening a bit towards their community. And I think, I don't think there's a ton I can add to it, but you know, you're seeing a lot more church leadership. Like this, it starts the article talking about a guy who used to be a bishop coming out last year, but not in the way we would think. More that he's saying he came out to make an apology to the gay and lesbian community for not taking the time to understand them, not really doing his homework. And I think that kind of perfectly encapsulates the mindset nowadays, is more that we're trying to do our homework, as he says, understand these other points of view, which is good, I think.
I think so, too.
Nothing funny happened this week. Did we laugh once?
No. We're against it this week.
This is a very serious episode.
We're down to business, man.
We really are. Let's get down to business.
Okay.
Baptize the Pope. Come on, Mulan. No? No?
No, I love Mulan.
Okay, I'm just making
but
sure.
But whatever.
You're whatever.
You're wasting time now.
You're wasting time. Fine, everybody. This show is over. Please find us at thisweekinmormons.com. Send us your comments and thoughts. We enjoy engaging with you. Please also go to facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. Let's bump those.
You can
those
find us on Twitter. Twitter at TheRealTwim.
I want to give a special shout out to whoever runs the leading LDS Twitter account, because they tweet lots of stuff at us. And so whoever you are, just want to just send the love for being a good tweeter when it comes to us.
Thank you.
Of course, contact at thisweekinmormons.com for any and all of your inquiries or whatever else you might want to say to us. And of course, we encourage you to keep a lookout for Sunday School Bonanza, our beautiful 10-minute gospel doctrine preparatory podcast.
Yes.
Well, that's going to be it. Everyone have a terrific rest of April. It's going to be May here next week. Pretty crazy.
Go make it happen.
All right. I'll take care, my friend.
See you, buddy.
Goodbye. Thank you, everyone, so much. That we couldn't do this show without you, so please know that we take that seriously and appreciate you taking the time to tune in. This has been the, 116th episode of This Week in Mormons. And we thank you for listening to it. All right, bye-bye.